Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. This time, we are taking a look at this document. We have 14th Amendment clarified.
Oh, yeah. This one is interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of people hear 14th Amendment and kind of tune out because it sounds like legalese.
Right.
But this one's actually pretty approachable and even entertaining in how it kind of breaks things down.
Yeah. I think it does a really good job of laying out its case and really trying to, like, put you in the shoes of the people who framed the amendment.
I like that. Yeah. Like, understanding the historical context.
Yeah.
You know, because I think a lot of times we can read something and think, okay, well, that's what it says.
Right.
But, like, how did we get there? Like, what were the debates and what were they trying to achieve?
Exactly. And especially with something like the 14th Amendment, which has been so hotly debated and interpreted in so many different ways over the years.
Right. Exactly. So what would you say is the biggest kind of takeaway or the most surprising thing that this document claims about the 14th Amendment?
Well, I think the most surprising thing is it argues that the 14th Amendment created a whole new type of U.S. citizenship.
Whoa, hold on. So you're saying there are like two different types of citizens of the United States?
That's what this document is arguing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It says that instead of simply extending citizenship to everyone born in the U.S., the 14th Amendment created a separate category of citizenship specifically for people who had been enslaved.
Okay, so I'm trying to wrap my head around this. So, like, before the 14th Amendment, how did someone become a U.S. citizen?
Well, before the Civil War and the 14th Amendment, it was all based on state citizenship.
Okay.
So if you were born in a particular state, you were a citizen of that state.
Right.
And that automatically made you a citizen of the United States as well.
So, for example, like if you were born in Virginia.
Exactly. You'd be a citizen of Virginia and therefore a citizen of the United States.
Gotcha. Yeah. But of course, this was all before,
you know, before the Civil War.
Right. Before the Civil War. And, you know.
And so this type of citizenship only applied to white people.
Right. Right. OK. So then the 14th Amendment comes along and it basically says, OK, well, now people who were formerly enslaved are also citizens.
Right. And it does so directly through the Constitution.
So it like bypasses the states.
Exactly. It's like creating a direct link between the federal government and these newly emancipated citizens.
OK. And so that's where this idea of like two types of citizens comes in.
Right. Because now you have the original type of citizenship based on state citizenship. And this new type of citizenship created by the 14th Amendment, which is directly granted by the federal government.
And this distinction is important because...
Because it gets to the heart of the document's argument about the intended scope of the 14th Amendment and its impact on the balance of power between state and federal governments.
This is fascinating, but I'm sure some people listening are thinking, well, doesn't the 14th Amendment say that all persons born or naturalized in the U.S. are citizens?
Right. It does say that, but the document zeroes in on a specific phrase in that amendment.
What is it?
Subject to the jurisdiction thereof. And it argues that this phrase is all about the source of jurisdiction, meaning who has the authority to grant citizenship.
So how does that apply to these two different types of citizens?
Okay, so for the original type of citizens, their citizenship came from their state. The state said, you're a citizen, and that automatically made you a U.S. citizen as well.
Right.
But for this new class of citizens created by the 14th Amendment, their citizenship came directly from the federal government. It bypassed the state altogether.
So like two different paths to citizenship.
Exactly. And the document argues that this distinction is key to understanding the true purpose and scope of the 14th Amendment.
Okay, I see. So it's not just about being a citizen.
Right.
It's about how you became a citizen and who granted you that citizenship.
Exactly. And as we'll see, this distinction has some major implications.
Well, I can already tell this is going to be a good one. So buckle up, everybody. We're going deep on the 14th Amendment.
Definitely. So, you know, a lot of times people think the 14th Amendment is like this big guarantee of equal rights for everyone.
Right. Like everyone's treated equally under the law.
Exactly. But this document kind of pushes back on that a little bit.
Okay. So how... So,
well, for one thing, it looks at some of these landmark Supreme Court cases that are often cited to support that idea of equal protection.
Okay.
And it argues that maybe they haven't been interpreted quite right.
Interesting. So, like, which cases are we talking about here?
Well, one example is the Bardmeier v. Iowa case.
Okay. Remind me, what was that one about again?
It had to do with a state law in Iowa that banned the sale of alcohol.
Oh, right, right. And people said that violated their 14th Amendment rights.
Exactly. And that case is often used to argue that the 14th Amendment protects all Americans equally under the law.
Okay, but this document's saying that's not the whole story.
Right. It's saying that if you look closely at the details of the case, and especially one particular judge's opinion,
Okay.
it suggests a different interpretation.
Wait, so one judge's opinion can change the whole meaning of a case?
Well, it's not just about the opinion itself, it's about the language the judge uses and what that reveals about how people were thinking about citizenship back then.
Okay, so what kind of language are we talking about?
So, in his opinion, the judge refers to the humblest citizen.
Okay.
And the document suggests this wasn't just a random phrase.
So what was so special about that phrase?
Well, the document argues that at the time, humblest citizen was kind of a coded way of talking about the newly emancipated black citizens.
Oh, interesting. Like they couldn't just say black citizens outright, so they used this other term.
Right, exactly. And by using the word humblest, it suggests that there were different levels of citizenship, even if the judge couldn't say it explicitly.
Wow, that's a really interesting interpretation.
Yeah, it just goes to show how much historical context matters when we're trying to understand these old legal documents.
Right. Because we tend to read them through our modern lens,
Yeah.
but things were so different back then. So, okay, but I'm still a little hung up on this idea that the 14th Amendment says all persons born or naturalized in the U.S. are citizens.
Yeah.
How does the document reconcile that with this whole two-tier system it's proposing?
Right. Well, remember that phrase we talked about before, subject to the jurisdiction thereof? The document keeps coming back to that phrase.
Right.
It's saying that this wording is crucial because it points to the source of a person's citizenship.
Right. Okay, so remind me, how did that work again?
So, for those who were citizens under the original Constitution, their citizenship came from their state.
Okay.
But for those who gained citizenship through the 14th Amendment, it came directly from the federal government.
Okay.
So, even though the amendment uses the word all, the document suggests it's not talking about everyone in the same way.
Gotcha. So there are these two groups of citizens with two different sources of citizenship.
Exactly. And that distinction, the document claims, has some pretty big implications.
Like, what kind of implications?
Well, one of the biggest has to do with the balance of power between the state and federal government.
Oh, right. Because now the federal government has this direct link to these newly emancipated citizens.
Exactly. And that's a big shift from how things were before the 14th Amendment.
So it's like the federal government suddenly has a much bigger role to play in people's lives.
Right. And the document argues that this expansion of federal power, while maybe unintentional, was a major consequence of the 14th Amendment.
That's interesting. You know, when you put it like that, it makes me wonder if the framers of the 14th Amendment really understood the long-term consequences of what they were doing.
It's a good question, and the document definitely raises some thought-provoking points about that.
So it sounds like this document is saying that the 14th Amendment wasn't so much about creating a perfect system of legal equality for everyone,
Right.
as it was about addressing a very specific problem, the legacy of slavery and the denial of citizenship to Black Americans.
Exactly. It's arguing that we need to understand the 14th Amendment in its historical context and not impose our modern ideas onto it.
That's a really important point, and it makes me think about how much of our current understanding of the Constitution is based on, you know, assumptions or interpretations that have developed over time rather than a really solid grounding in history.
Right. And that's why documents like this one are so valuable. They challenge us to rethink our assumptions and engage in a more historically informed analysis.
Well said. Okay, so besides the Bartemeyer case, are there any other key rulings that the document uses to support its claims?
Yeah, definitely. It also looks at the slaughterhouse cases.
Oh, right. The slaughterhouse cases. Now, those were pretty controversial, weren't they?
They were, yeah, and they're often cited as evidence that the 14th Amendment's protections are limited.
Okay, so remind me, what were the slaughterhouse cases all about?
So it involved a group of butchers in New Orleans who were challenging a state law that basically created a monopoly on slaughterhouses.
Oh, right. Like only one company was allowed to operate a slaughterhouse.
Exactly. And the butchers argued that this law violated their 14th Amendment rights.
Interesting. So what happened?
Well, the Supreme Court ruled against the butchers.
They did.
Yeah, they said that the 14th Amendment's privileges or immunities clause, which is the part that deals with protecting individual rights,
Okay.
only applied to rights associated with federal citizenship, not state citizenship.
Oh, so the court was basically saying that the 14th Amendment didn't give the federal government the power to intervene in this case.
Right. And the document uses this ruling to further support its argument that the 14th Amendment was really focused on protecting the rights of newly emancipated black citizens.
Okay, I see, because they were the ones who were considered federal citizens under the amendment's new definition.
Exactly.
So the slaughterhouse cases kind of reinforced this idea that the 14th Amendment wasn't meant to be this like catch-all guarantee of equality for everyone.
Right. It was a much more targeted response to a specific historical injustice.
That's a really interesting point. And it makes me think about, you know, sometimes we try to read these broad principles into the Constitution.
Uh-huh.
But really, it's a product of its time, and it was addressing very specific issues.
Absolutely.
This is fascinating stuff. I have to say, this document is really making me rethink some of my own assumptions about the 14th Amendment.
I think that's one of its strengths. It challenges us to really examine the complexities of our legal system and how it's evolved over time.
Yeah, and to be open to different interpretations, even if they challenge our preconceived notions.
Exactly.
You know, as we've been talking about this document, I keep thinking about how important it is to understand the historical context.
Absolutely.
Like, it's not enough to just read the words of the 14th Amendment.
Right.
We have to try to understand what the people who wrote it were actually trying to achieve.
Exactly. The document really emphasizes that point.
Yeah. Like, what were the problems they were facing? What were their goals?
It's like trying to understand a work of art. You know,
yeah.
You wouldn't just look at a painting without knowing anything about the artist or the time period.
Right. You need that context.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you're missing a huge part of the story.
And you might misinterpret what you're seeing.
Exactly. And it makes you wonder how much of our current understanding of the 14th Amendment is based on, you know, solid historical analysis versus assumptions or interpretations that have just kind of developed over time.
That's a great question. And I think this document really encourages us to re-examine those assumptions.
Yeah, to go back to the source and try to see it through the eyes of the people who wrote it.
To engage in a more historically informed analysis.
So after going through all of this, what would you say are some of the key takeaways from this document?
Well, I think the biggest one is the importance of historical context, like we've been saying.
Right.
You can't just look at the law in isolation. You have to understand the circumstances surrounding its creation.
And the motivations of the people who created it. Because sometimes their intentions might be different from how the law is interpreted later on.
Right. And that leads to the second key takeaway, which is this idea that the 14th Amendment may have created two distinct types of citizens.
Right. Right. That's a big one.
It's a bold claim, and it might be controversial, but the document presents a lot of evidence to support it.
Yeah, it's definitely something to think about. And even if you don't agree with the document's interpretation, it still makes you question some of your assumptions.
Absolutely.
And then the third takeaway that I found really interesting was the emphasis on federalism.
Oh, yeah.
Like how the 14th Amendment shifted the balance of power between the state and federal governments.
Right, and how that shift has had ripple effects throughout history.
It's like this one amendment set in motion all these changes that we're still grappling with today.
And that's why it's so important to understand the 14th Amendment, not just as a piece of legal text, but as a historical turning point.
It's a reminder that even laws that are passed with good intentions can have unintended consequences.
Right, and that understanding those consequences is crucial for being an informed citizen.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive, I have to say.
It really has.
It's given me a lot to think about, and I'm sure our listeners feel the same way.
I hope so.
So to wrap things up, I think the big question that this document leaves us with is, if this interpretation of the 14th Amendment is correct, what does that mean for us today?
Right. What does it mean for our understanding of citizenship and rights in America?
It's a complex question, and I don't think there's an easy answer.
Definitely not, but it's a question worth asking.
Absolutely. Well said. Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive. It's been a pleasure as always.
My pleasure was all mine.
And thanks to all our listeners for tuning in. We'll see you next time.